I've seen seagulls over that for six. They look like flies on a, I don't know what. These seem the same seagulls I know have been in the rivers and the streams and the drinking water on play unless they're walking around on the school grounds. This dump will have to drain. There's no other way. It has to drain in the Willamette River or in Abernathy Creek or in the Clackamas. They go through some berm to get there, but it gets there. There's no other way. Now that is a safe and sanitary procedure. There is absolutely nothing in rural Clackamas County that we can do that's going to contaminate anything. And this may be quite a statement, but that's just my feeling on that.
Other questions of Mr. Ross? If there are no, thank you, sir.
I have one or two more comments if I can.
All right.
I call for a uniform water pollution control code. It'll make the cities come up to the standards as expected of the rural areas. If we do not, we'll have the same problem that has come on the eastern seaboard in the industrial east. We'll have rivers ruined, such as the Hudson River in New York. The city of Portland has plenty of tax base in there. Let them do the thing that they're supposed to do. Now, as far as Washington County refusing to pay into the Columbia Willamette Air Pollution Control Authority, hooray for them. I'm all for them. I see that they've done a little bit to add to our problems. I see that they've done nothing to solve our problems. And if they have, it hasn't been shown. I thank you for your time. I am very worried about this colonial approach. This is nothing more than colonial government. Other nations have thrown it off, and they've thrown it off with violence and bloodshed. We threw it off in 1770s, and if you put it on our back again, it may have to be done again. If we're going to have government, keep the people involved in their government, 100%. I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ross. Meeting adjourned.
January 25th, Committee Meeting of Environment and Land Use on Senate Bill 100.
Sure, you and the other members of the committee know I have been speaking throughout the state on this measure. And I recently read in the paper that Senator McPherson had said I didn't understand the bill. Well, that kind of hurt me, Senator, but I've been reading bills for off and on for 10 years, but perhaps after this session today, well, I will better understand the bill. Here is my first question. Are the regulations to be adopted by the Commission pursuant to Section 44, page 23, line 7, governing land conservation and development proposals to be carried out within areas of critical state concern to be approved by the legislature before they are implemented?
Okay. And for the members of the audience, there are some extra copies of Senate Bill 100. If you don't have one, I hope there's enough on the, to the right of the witness until they're gone. Gentlemen, would you like to just go ahead and respond? Could you try to speak up for the audience?
Under the provisions of Section 44 of Senate Bill 100, generally speaking, the regulations, objectives for regulations for areas and activities of critical state concern are developed by the Commission within a prescribed period. They are adopted by the Commission, reviewed by the Committee, but the Commission adopts them and they are then in effect. At the 1975 legislature, they are reviewed and approved finally. So what we're talking about is an initial approval, so they go into effect, which is by the Commission. And secondly, the final approval by the 75 legislature.
For you yet?
No, that's sure.
Senator Attia?
You used the word approved. Now, can we disapprove it also?
Theoretically, yes.
So it's disapprove or disapprove?
Yeah.
Now, Mr. Chairman, on the front of the bill, there's a summary. And starting with the eighth line down, it says, requires the Commission, subject to approval of the Legislative Assembly, to promulgate and implement statewide objectives and regulations for such areas, referring back up to the areas. Now, is that not misleading to the public that reads that? Because if I, just like you said, Mr. Hogg, I believe it is, the facts of the matter are that although the law provides that the committee has...
Jim, let me interrupt you on that one. I must say in 10 years that, I hope I'm not offending anybody, but the writers of the Digest in the front have made some notorious mistakes. We do not enact into law that language you read at all. Your assumption may be correct or incorrect, but please, could we just confine ourselves to what, if we do adopt it, we will enact into law? That's just like a short story, and sometimes it's read like fiction in the past. And it has very little relevance, I'm ashamed to say, sometimes to some of the contents of the legislation. So that's rather unfair. It may be, you know, wrong or right, but why don't we stay with the bill?
All right, thank you, Chairman. On page 15, starting on line 22, section 8, the bill seems to state that all land situated within 200 feet of the right-of-way of a highway declared a scenic highway under ORS 377.530 shall be considered as an area of state of concern if this land is within the boundaries of an incorporated area. Am I correct in my assumption on that?
You are correct. The distinction, the if distinction there, the condition is that it says 1,000 feet from the right-of-way boundary if they're located outside the incorporated area, let's say within a county,
okay.
And 200 feet from the right-of-way boundary.
My fourth question. Is this not then in direct conflict with ORS 377530, paragraph 2 in parentheses, A in parentheses, which states that the scenic area board shall not have the power to establish a scenic area in any area on a public highway within the boundaries of an incorporated municipality?
This could well be in conflict with that statute.
Thank you.
Well, let me interrupt with the question. In conflict, I mean, this language, or if Senate Bill 100 were enacted into law, there would be a conflict?
Chairman, I have...
I'm asking our counsel. If Senate Bill 100 were enacted, this conflict would remain?
As this is drafted, Mr. Chairman, if the Scenic Area Board has no right to designate an area as a scenic highway or a scenic area within an incorporated area, the part of this provision that says 200 feet within the incorporated boundaries of the incorporated area would be meaningless. There would be no point to start from.
My fifth question. Is it possible, from a legal standpoint, if Senate Bill 100 were to become law in its present form, that a stock farmer owning 80 acres currently zoned F1 in Washington County could be forbidden to add on to his barn because of a prohibition on building in an area of state critical concern, yet be permitted to build a brand new one just 100 feet from the one he wished to enlarge? To clarify, may I refer to our diagram up there? We have state highway number so-and-so declared a scenic area by scenic area board. To the left of the highway is an 80-acre farm, 1.5 mile long by 1/4 mile wide. It has a brown field, that's dirt. There's a line down through that which designates the 1,000-foot mark. Senator Tia is sitting in front of the barn, but behind there is a barn there. And it's my understanding, and the reason for posing the question is that the commission could promulgate rules regarding construction or no construction. So here I see a possibility, or is there a possibility, that he would be forbidden to add on to his barn, but he could build a brand new one because it would be on the other side of the 1,000-foot.
You're correct.
Thank you. Does this bill grant authority to the commission to regulate the cutting or harvesting of timber on land within an area of state critical concern? There's the timber, those green trees.
The bill does not prohibit any intervention in anything that may be covered by, let's say, the Oregon Forest Practices Act at this time. The bill assumes that the administration of the Oregon Forest Practices Act will be commensurate with the terms of this legislation. This is the umbrella covering the activities of all the state agencies.
Mr. Chairman, under present zoning laws in Washington County, at least, this particular tract of land along a scenic highway for zone F1, there are no rules or regulations that would prevent the man from harvesting timber, clear cutting completely. Now my question is, does the law, the proposed law, provide a legal means whereby the commission could in any way regulate the harvesting of that timber? Thank you. If the commission did enact such rules and regulations, and the landowner was forbidden to harvest his timber, or was permitted to cut only a portion of it when good forest management calls for clear cutting, it follows that a serious loss of net worth would occur. has legislative council asked the Attorney General if it violates the United States Constitution for the legislature to give the governor the power through an appointed board to destroy the network of a rural landowner by creating a scenic park for tourists to look at when they drive by?
Well, now, what kind of a subjective? That's not an objective question of counsel. Jim? How would you couch a letter to the, to whom? The Attorney General of the United States, to the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, to the Attorney General of Oregon, and use exactly the prose you did? Can't you couch it in a little more objective way?
Sir, I apologize. I meant the Attorney General of the state of Oregon.
Right, no, but couch your line. What would you have him ask? If you had him ask some question, how would you couch that question in more objective language?
Well, since I'm not an attorney, I would assume that perhaps legislative counsel could do a better job than I, but if I were as a layman, I'd write to him and I'd say, "Dear Mr. Attorney General, if Senate Bill 100 is passed, and if a commission refuses to allow a farmer to cut his timber, is that constitutional?"
All right, now you, simple question. I won't ask him to respond to it. I'll have our secretary note it, and if the committee concurs, we may ask the Attorney General, subject to the President of the Senate's permission, that question.
On page 14, line 11, does recreation area mean, or what does recreation area mean? Could this be construed to include the Powhatan Hills Park and Recreation District in the Beaverton area?
It could be construed to include any park or recreation area administered by that unit of local government. Yes.
Thank you, sir. On the subject of statewide planning guidelines, on section 46, line 23.
What page? Page 23?
Yes, page 23. May the commission, in adopting statewide guidelines, provide different guidelines in different portions of the state? May the guidelines for constructing a new comprehensive plan for the development of District 2 be different than the guidelines for the development of District 11?
Under this bill, guidelines could be different. In fact, policy was discussed that would allow the guidelines to relate specifically to the type of comprehensive land use plan technique that was needed for a given area.
Thank you. In other words, then, the commission could adopt guidelines that might apply only to a certain county, like Lincoln County.
Yeah.
Or would it have to be couched in language like, say, the coastal area?
I would think that it would have to be couched in language of same or similar comprehensive land use problems.
Thank you. Is it legally possible for the commission to adopt the following statewide planning guideline? Quote, in areas where no approved public sewage system exists, the density of single-family dwellings shall not be increased to exceed an average of one per each 40 acres.
Under this bill, it would be possible for the commission to do that.
Thank you, sir. Assume Senate Bill 100 is adopted in its present form. Could the commission adopt rules that would prevent a landowner located within the city limits of downtown Coos Bay and within 1,000 feet of the Coos River estuary from continuing to use his land adjacent to the estuary and the estuary as a log dump?
Let me answer you under generally accepted principles relating to land use planning. There is
this would be considered an area of critical state concern. We're talking about the estuary area created or designated here by the bill. All right. So the state has expressed a statewide concern relating to the regulation of the use of that area. Now the question would then arise whether or not this particular owner's use would equal what the law calls a pre-existing use. In other words, an exemption because it was already there before the control was placed upon that land.
That brings a very interesting question that I didn't have on my list. If you're implying that it's called a grandfather clause or something of that nature?
It's not a grandfather clause, it's an accepted principle of the law.
I see. Well, then if we who are zoned F1 and who have at the present time, for practical purposes, only a 2-acre minimum size lot, now are you suggesting that because that land use is in existence that you're not going to be able to come by and change that?
What I'm suggesting, Mr. Allison, and I think you've probably heard this before, is that when the state comes in and declares an area of statewide critical concern, call it what you will, the question then arises to what extent can the state exert power over that particular area of land or activity, as this case may be in this bill, to regulate the use of that land. And if there is an existing law dump that is completely anathema to the type of land use control that is considered a matter of statewide concern, then the question arises, can the state get rid of that pre-existing use? I don't know what the answer is. I think it would vary with fact situation.
Thank you. Again, referring to downtown Coos Bay, I think I know the answer to this, but anyhow, let's ask it. Could the commission enact rules that would prevent a landowner whose land is currently being used as a site for a warehouse from tearing down that building and constructing a marina?
If marinas were by regulation prohibited as a use within that area, yes.
Thank you. Am I correct on page 5? Am I correct in my interpretation of lines 14 and 15 on page 5 of the bill? That is, it appeared to the governor that the 5 members he has appointed to the Land Conservation and Development Commission weren't going to enact the type of regulations he wanted. He could fire all 5 and start over with a new commission.
Yes.
Thank you.
Fire them for whatever reason you like.
On page 10, section 22, lines 24 through 27. May we have an explanation of precisely what powers are granted by the statement? Quote, each district council shall coordinate land conservation and development by the cities, counties, and special districts within the planning district. I mean, what power is granted by the word coordinate? An action verb, I believe.
It's an action verb, meaning, I suppose, in the generic, that the planning council or district council would have the power, if you want to call it a power, to draw home, to coordinate. This is a set.
But here you go. Does the bill propose?
Jim, just a minute.
Well, I would like to call our attention to the chart on the wall here, which demonstrates how this works. We have a chart up here, which we promised you for this hearing, which shows how the comprehensive plans of the special districts, the cities and counties are brought together at this one level, and this is where the coordination takes place. Only if you get a conflict here, which can't be resolved by this, as been described as jawboning, do we take this on up to for resolution at the state level? But this is the level at which the coordination, in other words, the plans are put together into a cohesive whole, recognizing the needs of all the different units of local government, plus all the input from all the state agencies, which must also be affected by this particular comprehensive land use plan.
Let me ask a precise question now on this. Does this bill propose to grant to this regional planning government the authority to approve or disapprove the comprehensive plan of development for Clackamas County?
Let me answer it this way. If there is a conflict of interpretation between the locals and the district cannot overrule the local. They simply appeal this up to the state commission where the matter is resolved at the state level.
In other words, then, under no circumstances is it proposed that the mayor of St. Helens to cast the deciding vote on a land use in the extreme parts of Clackamas County. It would be the state commission that would make the decision.
Where you have a conflict between the two units, the state commission makes the final judgment.
Let me make sure I understand this. The county proposes their plan. It goes up to the regional government. Regional government says, we don't think you're complying with the rules and regulations promulgated by the five-member board of commissioners. And the county says, well, we think we are. Then that's, in other words, the regional council then has no jurisdiction and it has to be referred to the state, and the state makes the decision.
Their action is to appeal that thing and each plead their case before the state commission, which acts in this case in an adjudicatory manner to decide the issue.
Thank you. On page 10, lines 14 through 18, this is a provision whereby if people don't like the way this is being done, you can initiate a petition. Assume the voters of Klamath Falls decided they would like to initiate a major change in number, qualification, and manner of selecting the district council for District 11. Let's further assume that their proposal call for the district council consists of three people: the mayor of Klamath Falls, the chairman of the board of commissioners in Klamath County, and the agricultural agent for Klamath County. The voter of the Lake County be permitted to vote on this initiative, Mayor.
Counselor. If I may answer this in a rather extended manner, first of all, as this particular provision is written, it assumes that we are creating a new body of voters, a new block of voters within the boundary of the paid planning district. Those voters as a whole may initiate a change or revision in the setup established initially for the planning council for that particular regional body. But this assumes that the whole area would vote on it. There's nothing in here speaking to the manner or the number or the percentage of the total voters within the area who could initiate. Yes, if Klamath County could initiate, or the voters of Klamath Falls, it would be subject to
my last question is it not possible under this bill for the city of Portland to take over complete control of all planning in the four county area through the jawboning process of electing a council from the heavily populated area?
Presumably, the election would be held by all the voters of the district on the one man, one vote procedure. Presumably, if the voters of the entire district, if you're assuming that they all came from Multnomah County, wanted to go in this particular direction, the majority of the vote wins.
Thank you. I have no more questions, Chairman.
Right, Jim, do you have a copy of your question you can give to the secretary?
Yes, sir, I have a copy. The rural landowners are not sufficiently organized yet or enough money for all copies, but I'll be glad to give one and she can do it.
Thank you. I think we can excuse what's excuse you. Thank you, gentlemen. Commissioner Lonnie Van Ellsberg of Coos County. Are you through, Jim?
Well, I'm
sorry. Are you finished? Commissioner Van Ellsberg? Did you want to ask him? Not here, probably. If you do have, we have a tape recorder, but if you do have written testimony, it's of great assistance to us. Better tell them all again who you are, Commissioner.
Okay, I'm Lonnie Van Ellsberg, Chairman of the Coos County Board of Commissioners.
Can you pull the microphone to you just a little bit, please? Thank you.
Okay. Okay, I'm here today to offer testimony opposing Senate Bill 100 as it is presently proposed. Since the adjournment of the last legislature, local governments have been coerced into accepting an executive order creating 14th administrative districts. I'm not opposed to a voluntary association of governments to review and comment on proposed plans within a given area. I am, however, opposed to a regional association having veto power over local governments. This bill, in its present form, will establish 14 district councils, giving them the power to veto plans of local governments. We have been told councils are necessary to avoid dealing with a large number of local agencies. Yet state government continues to grow, as witnessed by the proposed Land Conservation and Development Department and Commission. As proposed in Senate Bill 100, the Department of Land Conservation and Development shall prescribe planning objectives and regulations to be applied by all governmental bodies. Five members of the Department of Land Conservation and Development will be appointed by the governor. This, in effect, puts all land use planning in the state under the control of one man. Any activity construed state concern requires a permit issued by the state. I feel the local governments are capable of properly preparing plans and issuing permits to ensure the orderly growth and development of the counties and of the state. This proposed bill allows the council of governments, not local governments, to appoint the district advisory committees. I feel in order to retain local control, local governments must make the appointments. This bill also allows the commission to perform any other function it considers necessary. I think that this should be defined better, and I believe this is open-ended. This bill would require each county and city and state to adopt comprehensive plans consistent with statewide objectives. We in Coos County are concerned about the orderly development of the state of Oregon, but we feel it must be done at the local level by local people. I cannot find anything in this bill that leads me to believe that the people of this state are going to have anything to say about the development of their areas. The continued reference to Orchard Council being the decision-making authority, the reference to all local plans being in conformance with the state plan. The counties and cities have spent thousands of dollars developing plans which they feel are adequate and acceptable to the people. Now we are told this is for naught, and all plans must be revised in conformance with the state guidelines. I will explain to you why I am concerned about the council of governments being given decision-making authority. First of all, the members of the council are not elected. The serving the position that they hold as commission members. I'd like to cite an example. The Coosbury Council of Governments is composed of Coos and Curry counties. All of the incorporated cities in both counties, three port districts, and one water district. A total of 16 local government agencies. Each member having two representatives, making a total of 32 voting members. Now let's assume that you live in the city of Coos Bay, in Coos County, and within Fort Coos Bay. People living in that city could vote for the city councilman of Coos Bay, the port commissioners of the Fort Coos Bay, and the two county commissioners. That's the only people that they could vote on, the 32 voting members. Okay, if you live in the county outside of the city and outside of the port district, you could only vote for the county's representative, which would be two out of 32. I hope that you can see that there is no way councils can be controlled by the voters. They are strictly a body that is dictated to and controlled by the city. In summation, I would like to say that we in Coos County, as well as other areas of the state, are concerned about the loss of local control. We feel that people should have a voice and a choice in the formation of regional government. Otherwise, it will not work. We are concerned about the powers given to a five-man committee appointed by the governor, whereby they will be the final authority in all matters which they determine are state concern. We feel matters of state concern should be more clearly defined. We are concerned about individual property rights. What happens to a person's property if he lives in an area determined to be a state concern? And is he restricted in the use of this property? I feel that if the state is going to legislate people from their property, then the state should be prepared to purchase the property as is being considered in Tolman County at Cape Coral. Thank you.
Do you have questions, Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Bruce?
I have a question, Mr. Van Elsberg. You have identified one of the key problems that I find in as a drafter of this bill in that we are facing, and that is what to do about this council of government level. It's there. I myself would like to do something about it. Could you suggest to us a way in which we could make this thing responsive to the people doing the kinds of things that need to be done at this level, the coordination of other units of local government? Would you support then a proposal that we divide each of the areas, council of government type areas, up into districts and have the COG board elected directly by the people in those districts?
Yes, if you can sell the council of government's idea, or it can be sold and people are elected, so they're subject to the voters, I would support it.
Thank you.
Senator Burns?
Commissioner, Coos and Curry is the administrative district.
Yes,
District 7. Well, what's the district that involves Coos, Curry, and Douglas, where the staff person lives over in Roseburg and gets on his horse and goes over and visits you once in a while? What district is that?
That's the Coos, Curry, and Douglas Economic Improvement Association.
That's something different.
That is something different. Yes.
Now, has the county court down in Coos County considered how this would work, this body that's proposed in this bill would work in relation to the Coastal Development Commission, the thing that Wilbur Turnick was chairman of. How does that fit into this? What are your views with respect to that? That's another district.
The Tri-County.
No, OCC and DC.
OCC and DC. How does that fit into this in your judgment?
Well, my feeling, the way this is being set up now, would be that anyone that had something they want to do with their land, say in the county, first of all, go to the planning commission. They have to approve there, then to the district council, then the Oregon Coastal Conservation Development Commission, then on this side, and then board. I think that's how they would fit into it. I think you have to do three or four governmental bodies to get approval on anything that's controlled by the Senate Bill 100.
Is that, Mr. Chairman?
That's correct.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right.
Thank you. Could I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
A man came to me yesterday with an interesting, different idea. DEQ talked about the county as the instrumentality to create a, whatever it was, solid waste. I'm not speaking of air quality regional. Okay. Or if a county wanted to coalesce with another county, in other words, if Coos said, okay, well, our problem is contiguous to Curry's or contiguous to Douglas's, it could do so. And I believe he said 13 have done so, singly or collectively. Let's just hypothesize a moment. What if that concept were in this bill rather than the COGS? Would you like it better?
We are involved in a study with Curry County.
Would you like it better?
Yes.
Would it meet your objections?
Yes.
Thank you.
Counties, if we can keep it local, I feel counties and cities matter where we should keep it. I'm not sold on this council.
But then they could voluntarily coalesce if they wanted to.
Yes.
And as you said, in this bill, the OCC and DC layer would still continue above them, above the counties, which are OCC and DC members.
Yes, I'd like to explain something right there too, if you're talking about that. At the present time, the counties do not make appointments to the Coastal Development Council of Governments to make the appointment.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
I guess it's K.A. Brown of the Farmers Political Action Committee. I didn't ask something. I learned a lesson a long time ago from Senator Potts. Is Mr. Allison still in the room?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Allison, just two short questions. The rural, Oregon rural landowners represents whom? And do you have a list of those members? Could you be kind enough to give the committee a list of the 1,300 members?
Well, that would take some little... Is it mandatory?
No, not at all. There's a purpose. Any individual citizen speaking here who says, I am an individual speak, fine, wonderful. And you wait that. When you say you've got an association, this committee would like to know really the force and effect and weight. I'm not going to belabor you or nitpick you, but if you could give me anything that shows us a state map with a geographic distribution of your members, if you don't want to give me a list, so we know for whom you are speaking.
I have no objection to giving the committee a list, but it'll take a little time to do it. It's growing every day.
At your convenience in the next few weeks, would that be?
That'd be fine.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Brown, is it Brown?
Yes.
Could you tell us, please, whom you represent first?
My name is Kenneth Alexander Brown, Executive Director of the Farmers Political Action Committee.
Could you tell us, please, what that committee embraces, who it embraces?
It embraces an organization of farmers who are concerned with the political drift of things today and organizations dedicated to rebuilding the independent American farm.
And how many farmers?
We do not put out information on that matter.
Oh, I see. We have no way of ascertaining how many farmers you represent.
No. We deal in controversial subjects, and some people who belong to the organization have stipulated that they do not wish their names to be known.
Can you tell us the numbers, just the number?
We don't put out numbers.
Can't divulge that either. I see. is this an Oregon group, just Oregon-wide?
No, we do have members out of state, but they are more or less supplementary members.
I mean, is it national in character or just Western?
We will take them as far as they come.
So we don't know how many members or what it represents or where they live?
No.
We don't know that, right. But we know that you do represent the Farmers Political Action Committee. Fine. Go ahead, sir. Where do you live, sir?
At Jervis, Oregon, out here in Box 163. Farmer Jervis. Farming on the land taken out by my grandfather's a donation land claim in 1850. I'm not going to concern myself much with the language of this bill. The thing that impressed me before I cut my prepared statement, and I'll deal more philosophically than specifically, because I think that's the nature of the bill itself. The thing that concerns me is that a commission yet to be established is to arrive at a comprehensive plan to which all cities, counties, and other districts must conform or else appeal. And the thing that appeals to me, and this is that all such appeals are directed back to the body that makes the initial decision, as fast as it is now. And I'm talking from our experience with zoning here in Marion County, which in general would fall under the same category in the Council of Governors. Now, in a prepared statement, and I will have a copy for each of you. At the outset, I will agree as to the desirability of a sloganized objective of Senate Bill 100, better known as the McPherson Bill. Ordinary area development, wise land usage, safeguard of livability, preservation of prime farmland, few indeed have questioned these as ideas. Those of us who have been close to the land have for many years watched with concern as the square miles of prime farmland disappear in the buildings in hard surface. And also for many years, those of us who have had the sewage from Valley Town oozing through our daily ditches have wondered just how long it would be before that situation became a matter of much needed official concern. The calls for wise land usage and livability, although certainly without an hard definition, have an emotional appeal to many people. In a general sense, it speaks well that lawmakers address themselves to such problems. In this discussion, I do not question the motives of any sponsors. But I do believe the idealistic glitter is blinding many people to some hard reality. The question which I am posing, will Senate Bill 100 or any other Land Control Act achieve these utopian objectives? The news media, through a continuing hard-sell propaganda campaign for land control, attempts to convey the implication that all these good things will come to pass if only we surrender ourselves to the bureaucracy structure proposed in such measures as Senate Bill 100. Senate Bill 100 establishes a police action bureaucracy without actual guidelines or limits of action. It places unlimited power on the hands of yet-to-be-appointed people who will not be answerable to the electorate. The bill institutionalizes the Council of Government concept, or COG. This is yet another layer of government not provided for by the Constitution nor bounded by constitutional safeguards. Officialdom created by Senate Bill 100, operating under police statutes, will not be servant of, but rather master over the people. Senate Bill 100 holds high the holy banner of ecology and then blasts away clear for its operation without concern or provision for the rights or well-being of the individuals injured by actions taken. Yes, the stated objectives are meritorious. But Senate Bill 100, with Senate Bill 100, we are cutting off the feet to cure the bunions. And indeed, it is more than that. Those who heard Senator McPherson state that they had drawn many of their ideas and the measures adopted by other states, this was in a previous meeting of this committee, were given a peephole view of its true origin. Even without his having said so, it's apparent that this proposed legislation holds the pattern of the heat and serve laws that had been disseminated all over the nation from the fountainhead of metro government located at 1313 60th Street in Chicago. A socialist wellspring of influence for city, county, state, and national legislation financed by the Great Tax Exempt Foundation. Senate Bill 100 does set the path and the seminal. The legislation is being pushed throughout the entire United States. The so-called public demand for land use control is an end product of that hard-sell campaign on the part of the news media. We have seen this graphically portrayed here in the Mid-Valley with newspaper editors pointing out, along with data repetition, the most urgent need for land controls. I believe that Marion County can provide something of a window upon the practical operation of so-called land controls. Marion County's three gung-ho commissioners at the first possible moment slapped letter of zoning on the rural areas of Marion County and denied the people any right to vote upon the subject. The Planning Commission appointed by these commissioners has been diligently high-handed and arbitrary. Public hearings have in many cases more nearly resemble star chambers than democratic procedure. We have seen witnesses browbeaten and intimidated with police action on open hearing when they insisted on speaking contrary to Planning Commission views. We have seen meetings recessed and another abruptly adjourned when opposition speakers attempted to state their case. Very little of this has been mentioned by the press, which has instead devoted its news to making land controls look good in the public eye. And also in Marion County, we have seen the ugly head of influence raised in the granting of zoning variance. I am referring now to the Chicago State of Grants Manager Service, where the rules were covertly changed to make that variance permissible. The revelations about that grotesque transaction, although brought off a public hearing, went unnoticed by the press. In our area, we saw a widowed farm lady forced to sell our farm for not too much more than the mortgage because the planner said it was land self loan and therefore prime farmland and should be so retained. What the planners did not understand was that this farm was cut at numerous angles with deep ravines and unsuited to modern large-scale farming methods. He was made to order for building sites and would easily have sold for an additional $1,000 an acre if it could be so used. And from what we have already experienced, we know there's only a matter of time until someone else with influence will get a variance on that property and collect the financial windfall that should rightly add on to the farm widow. Oregon's farm population is in its 60s. The young men have largely left the land. Within the next 10 to 15 years, there will be a vast turnover of farmland, either by forced sale of aging farmers or a settlement of estates. As long as farming remains in bankruptcy, much of that land will barely bring mortgages and back taxes when it is sold as farmland. And we know, too, that syndicates will secure vast areas of this cheap land, get their variances as needed, and dole this land onto the building market in a tightly controlled monopoly. Truly, what is taking place across the nation with such measures as Senate Bill 100 is the greatest land steal in history, and at the expense of America's long-suffering farm population. This is the premise upon which our organization stands in saying that such measures as this, enacted into law, constitute the greatest injustice yet inflicted upon America's farm people. This measure reaches beyond the farm and imposes control also upon city people. There is a way to preserve the farms and the open countryside. And that way is to provide hope once more for the farmers. Hope that will encourage the young men to stay on the farm. When such hope is present, Jim Farmers would yield to the developers. But this is a solution that neither the all-wise newspaper editors or the graduate planners can be expected to comprehend as they fashion socialist stocks and chains for the farmer to hold him to the land, quite as galley slaves were chained to their oars a couple of millennia ago. What we see in this disappearance of farmland is a reflection of the national farm problem. There is a solution, a political one, but perhaps not germane to this discussion. I would urge you to consider well before you say yes to Senate Bill 100. This is a solution in the Soviet pattern, not in the American tradition of free men. We have seen a microcosm of its performance here in Marion County. Not a democratic procedure, but a commissariat in action. To those who argue that the individual must be set aside in the name of the greater common good, which is the basic tenor of Senate Bill 100, I would like to remind you that every blood purge that old Joe Stalley ever conducted was also in the name of the greater common good. The motives of those promoting Senate Bill 100 are no doubt sincere, and certainly they are idealistic. But the land control measures now being pushed so vigorously throughout the nation actually have a sinister design. Behind the facade of meritorious purpose, they represent a move to set aside the basic rights of private property. This drive on land control has its counterpart in attack now being leveled against the Elks Lodges. There too, an attack on the principle of private property, that one behind a smokescreen of racial discrimination charges. I would urge you to contemplate the fact that destruction of private property rights is one of the basic dogmas of world socialism. Senate Bill 100 is carte blanche. A blank check power grab over the property, the lives, and the savings of countless Oregonians. A power grant that flies in the face of constitutional concepts and American tradition. Beneath a sugary coating of lofty intent, it is the embodiment of an alien and ambitious philosophy, and I urge you to reject it. And I would like to add that if this, by mischance, this measure should become law, our organization, in conjunction with other concerned groups, will endeavor to initiate its repeal.
Senator Brown.
Mr. Brown, we have a land problem, don't we? A farm problem, particularly in the area where you live, right? There is a problem with the farms being swallowed up and things like that, right?
That is true, but as I mentioned here, the bankruptcy of the farm has taking the young men away from the land, and so what are these aging farmers going to do with these farms, with these monumental tax bills?
Well, how do we as a state legislature begin to address ourselves to the problem? Do I understand from your testimony that you don't favor the planning commission concept at all?
Well, what we've seen out of Marion County for about 4 years now has really been something to conjure with. There's nothing democratic about it. It overrides over people roughshod. It cuts their property value in half or two-thirds. It makes other people well-to-do, but wherever the line falls, it's completely undemocratic, and I don't believe there's any justification or other constitutional concepts or whatever.
Well, of course, zoning has been upheld as constitutional by the Supreme Court going back into the 1800s. So as far as zoning is concerned, that is constitutional, and that's been perpetuated through the years by court decision.
Well, now, what you're talking about, I seriously question if it has an application of what they're doing now.
Well,
in the name of zoning.
The previous witness testified to the fact that he was concerned about the power, so to speak, in this bill being given to councils of government, which
make the decision. We did that in the Chicano Center. They've had a hearing after hearing in the Chicano Center, the situation down there at Jefferson, and the one appeal that the farmers filed was rejected out of hand.
But talking about democratic government, if the majority of the people don't agree with what their elected officials do, they can vote them out of office, right?
Yeah, I know. Against the news media?
I wouldn't know anything about the news media. They've always been good to me.
Thank you. You might add that we'll have to restrict the opponents to end at 4:10, giving them their full hour. Try to make it an hour each time. This time, and next Tuesday we go at it again. Jane L. Button of the Oregon Legislative and something research. Is it Jane Button? Would you tell us, please, what is the name of the group?
The Oregon Legislative and Research Committee.
Who does that represent?
That represents the people of Oregon all throughout the state. We have coordinators in most of the counties throughout the state of Oregon. They're a national organization.
How many members do you have in Oregon?
Well, I'm sorry, I'm not on the membership committee.
Well, do you have five or do you have 5,000? What would it be nearer?
I would say it would be closer to 5,000, maybe 10,000.
Would it be closer to 50,000?
No, not in our state, perhaps nationally.
You say that in Oregon you might have as many as 10,000 members?
Possible, yes.
Is it possible that somebody on the membership committee could give us a little note or a letter in the coming week and tell us how many members you have?
Well, I don't think that is public information.
That's not public information, right. So we take your word that you represent 10,000 people, but you can't be sure and you can't really tell us with certainty.
I might even represent more.
Well, we certainly wouldn't want you to share that secret with us, so... fine, would you like to proceed? Remembering we'll end at 4:10. This part.
My name is Jane, a committee member, and guest here. My name is Jane Button, and I'm the state coordinator of the Oregon Legislative and Research Committee, post office box 16102, Portland, Oregon, zip code 97216. I welcome any letters from any of the legislators or any of the people in the audience. I noticed our gentleman that was sitting up front is missing. Mr. Hawes, is he not going to be here?
Oh, he's been excused. He was to respond, his job was to respond by prearrangement to questions from Mr. Allison.
I see. I have two questions for him.
Would you just enter them to the record?
What's that?
Go ahead, pose your questions.
Well, I wanted to ask them directly to him, sir.
Well, you'll ask them through the committee or they shan't be asked.
Well,
he's legislative counsel. He's excused. He's our legal counsel. I say, if you'll say them aloud in the record, I'll see that they're posed to him.
Well, I'd rather have his presence here if you don't mind.
Well, we'll discuss it later. Go ahead with your testimony then.
All right. My question is, why can't the local people in their own planning areas, why can't they work through their local elected officials to do the job that is now proposed to be done by the District Council of Local Government?
Is that one of your questions?
That's a question.
That's beyond his purview. He's an attorney. We're the legislators, and that's the kind of policy decision that we're going to be making, right or wrong. So that question's on the record. Now, would you like to ask the other question?
Myself, as the state coordinator, I say that we do not need this super layer of government over our elected officials. I'd like that to be on record. And we feel that the 14 administrative districts that were first set up through an executive order by our governor are illegal. And our committee has set out a petition to the citizens of the state, and I have in my presence at this time a copy of that petition, and if I may, I would like to read it to you. There are over 2,000 signatures in my presence now.
That's fine if you can read it in 3 minutes or 4 minutes, or otherwise you can give us a copy of it. As you wish.
I think you had a copy of this before, but I'd like to read it, sir, if I may. We feel, this is not petition now, but we do feel that this local council of government is a branch of the 14 administrative districts, which leads into regional government. And we feel regional government stems from the United Nations organization. And whereas it is the opinion of the undersigned that too much power has been assumed by the executive branch of our state government, thus denying the citizens a true representative government. And whereas Article 1, Section 1 reads, quote, all power is inherent in the people, and all free governments are founded on their authority. Whereas Article 3, Section 1 reads, quote, the powers of the government shall be divided into three separate departments, the legislative, the executive, including the administrative and the judicial, and no person charged with official duties under one of these departments shall exercise any of the functions of another except in this Constitution expressly divided. And whereas Article 1, Section 20 reads, quote, no law shall be passed granting to any citizen or any class of citizens privileges or immunities which upon the same terms shall not equally belong to all citizens. And whereas Article 1, Section 21 reads, no ex post facto law or law incurring the obligation of contract shall ever be passed, nor shall any law be passed, the taking effect of which shall be made to depend upon any authority except as provided in this Constitution. I'm going to skip part of this and read at the bottom. Therefore, we the undersigned, citizens of the sovereign state of Oregon, do hereby petition our legislators of the state of Oregon to begin an investigation of the constitutionality of Governor's Administrative Edict, Executive Order Number 6811, creating 14 state administrative districts, and his Executive Order Number EO72-9, that established a 15-member Economic Development Council. Because of the time and because there are other witnesses, I'd like to say that should this law pass, our organization will immediately attempt to repeal it. I thank you.
Questions? Thank you. We'll ask Grace Lean of the Voice of Liberty, if she can, to come back on at Tuesday's hearing. Now we'll turn to the proponents. Commissioner Elton Howe, here.
Yes.
Excuse me, and also ask George Auckland, if this is the correct reading, Portland to please come back next Tuesday. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly. Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Eldon Howe, Chairman of the Washington County Board of Commissioners. I speak today for myself. I live at 606 Lane Forest Grove, Oregon. I've never been to 1313 and 60th Street. I speak really from the perspective of about 6 years in county government and 35 years, all of my life in the state of Oregon. And it's from a perspective, I think, of not trying to defend any piece of political turf in Washington County, the Willamette Valley, or anything else, but to try and look at the problems that we face in Oregon in terms of making it and continuing to make it livable. My responses are somewhere between the section-by-section analysis and a sort of simple philosophic agreement with the bill. I'm not in total agreement with all of the legislation. But I think the state has a right and an interest in setting statewide guidelines. I think it has a power and an interest that supersedes local charters. And I think that it is secondly responsive to the Federal Land Use Planning Acts, one of which will probably require a statewide planning effort. And I'm glad to see the session of the legislature ready with some kind of legislation that can meet this. I see the bill as really a first attempt of the legislature to coordinate planning efforts under state criteria with regional review of local activities with regional implications, but with really the bulk of land use activities still at the local level. And I think that is a crucial part that could continue to be emphasized. My major concern today, and perhaps I can respond to it in the question period if there are any, is this controversial question of the councils of government or the 14 planning districts. My concern is that whatever you do, you at least provide the opportunity for so-minded jurisdictions to be able to get together. In the Portland metropolitan area since 1966, the Columbia Region Association of Governments has been in existence. It has worked fairly well. It's working better now than it has. It is probably not as good an organization as the Lane County COG or the Mid-Willamette Valley COG, but it is making some progress. We can sit down together and discuss our problems, come up with some view as to what constitutes regional problems, and I think begin to attack them. We are in the process of updating our regional plan. We are in the process at the Craig Executive Board level of looking ahead to the future as to how we might better restructure ourselves so as to meet the challenge of rapid growth in Oregon. Washington County is the most rapidly growing county in the state of Oregon, if not in the Northwest. And we have profound problems. We need the tools that I think this legislation can provide for us. We need, I think, in Washington County to be able to look at some of the problems around the rest of the state. For me personally, Century Drive.